My name is Jelena Sivulka. I come from Serbia. I married an American, so that's where the accent is. It's not like I binge Netflix or something like that. We do speak Serbian at home. We have three kids, Benjamin, Sarah, and Hannah. Greg came to Serbia in 1990 as an 18-year-old kid on a two-week mission trip. No, he didn't fall in love with me. He fell in love with the country, and he got stuck with me later on. He's going to meet me later. I'm going to become a Christian in 1992. He came in 1990. And like, it's every messy marriage and family, it is really good that he fell in love with country. Because if I will be the reason for him to stay, and a lot of people love this romance, then I will be a reason for him to leave sometimes. And so God called him, and we've been in Serbia on a, he's a pastor, so we did for 25 years church planting. So we will just pack our little family and go from town to town where God led us in starting churches. And in all of that, and it's, I mean, I think that this could be probably more confession than teaching, actually. And actually, the title of this session, I really wanted to be How to Ruin Your Children. But then Greg Pritcher said, Jelena, I don't think you're going, like, that is really a nice title. So let's say, okay, how not to. So pretty much do not do this. How many of you are parents here? Okay, so majority. It's hard. It's hard raising children, you know, despite of the circumstances we are in, today is certainly a very hard time. And I'm going to talk about that and what's happening. And it's very often, this was when I first started thinking more on this topic, is actually when my middle child was a teenager. So Benjamin is 29, Sarah's 25, and Hannah's 20. What makes our family a little unique is that Hannah has severe autism. I grew up in a family of three girls. I was the baby. I was the youngest. And again, a very quite dysfunctional family. My dad was accused to be a Russian spy when I was 1 year old, and he was gone, and he was out of the picture for actually a very, very long time. He got 10 years in prison, and he's gonna come back, but he's gonna stay away from family. It's a communism time, and it's, you know, if you're in a favor with a party, you get all a great, amazing ride. If you're not in favor of the party, then your housing, your job, your education, everything is questioned. And it's, so I never heard the gospel. I love to tell this to my kids, you know. So I married American, so my kids are really introduced to Christmas. So I didn't even have Christmas. We never heard the gospel. Never, never. I mean, I never heard as a little kid. Whoever grew up in a communist country, that is not unusual. So I'm just kind of like giving you a little picture of my family and where this, all this mess comes from. But never heard the gospel. My mom is Romanian. So you vorbesc limba română, puțin, numai nu atât de bun. And there is that loud, fun side of, you know, that all these, you know, fun side of the, you know, she would totally dance. And I seriously, Romanians in Serbia dance, and there's music even at a funerals, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just, seriously, there's a lot of laughter, and bless her heart. Both of my parents are still alive, and pray for them. They're not believers. They're 85, and oh my gosh, it's tough, and it's sad. But anyways, so my dad is Serbian, and he never allowed us to speak Romanian at home, because he didn't want us to talk about, you know, about him. But well, he was not there very quickly, so guess what? We spoke Romanian. And I spent summers with my grandparents, so there was a lot of Romanian and a lot of Serbian, and that's kind of messy, you know, that poor Greg, my husband that came in, and he comes from Sivulka. It's a Slovakian, so my husband is Slovakian. So you see, I'm a little bit, my kids are just certainly a little bit of Europe, a taste of Europe. And his mom is Hunline, German. So gosh, what are my kids, you know? And he comes from family, like generations of being in a ministry, you know, good Baptist, you know, and I come from these heathen family. And now we're gonna raise children. And also we are doing it all in Serbia. And just to, some of you heard this, but this is how sometimes I introduce myself. My mom had me in the same hospital where I had all three of my kids. So it's the same building, guys. I mean, that's, you know, a little bit of Europe there to you. So it's the same building. My mom had me, and then 30 years, you know, 20 to 30 years later, I'm going to have kid number one, number two, number three. All four of us were born in four different countries. It's the same city, the same building. In our birth certificate, there are four different countries. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little Balkan to you. And there was a war, there was bombing, there were, we were kind of losing one republic after, like from 1990 in 1990, I cannot remember now when actually Hannah was born. It was like just constantly somebody would leave, serve. So, I mean, that tells you a lot about us, stiff-necked nation. But that's it. That's a little bit of everything. And also, there is, and I was yesterday speaking on pain and suffering, there is a picture of us. So we would go to different towns, start the church. Of course, my parents are terrified that we are going and sharing, you know, this, that we are part of the cult, because evangelical small church is considered a cult in Eastern Europe. So we are part of the cult, and we go and proselyte. You know, we go to from town to town and tell everybody about Jesus. So, you know, my whole family is shocked and, you know, appalled. And then there's Greg's family, so happy and proud for what we are doing. So there's a picture of us, and this was in 2007. The picture of Greg and me, three kids, and of course, Golden Retriever. And I think that was the last picture when I felt we were happy. And the reason I tell you this, because I'm totally going to share everything if you need all the things that I'm going to, you know, all the slides, you can get all of that. It is pretty much majority of these books that I've read and I'm recommending you is me trying to find any sense in all of this. That summer, Hannah's going to be diagnosed with autism. The church that we started, we could not bring her. We would bring her, but I would always have to leave because she would scream so much. We didn't know how to welcome our own child in a church that we started, and it's still a challenge. She's 20 years old, and it's our 14-year-old daughter, and I was baking something, and this is exactly how I felt. Our 14-year-old daughter, at the age of 15, wanted to get married, and of course he's not even a believer, and I'm thinking, what in the world are you thinking? And it's like raising a child, a teenager, is like baking a cake. It is, if you get very close to the oven, and especially if you open the oven, it is very steamy and hot. If you get very close to that, very often it's too late to add something. You're like thinking, oh my gosh, I forgot to put sugar in. Oh, too bad, you know. So it's like very often you're like, oh gosh, where is this going? And you anticipate and hope that the end, it will turn out to be fine. Because there's just a moment when you are, you know, you're pouring, you're doing, you're, and then I remember when we told our kids goodbye, they went to college, I'm thinking, I didn't have enough time. How are you gonna be an adult? And it is not easy. And I think very often, I studied psychology, then I went to psychotherapy, and then I did a lot of psychotherapy, and then I did master's in theology, and nothing helped. Then I did PhD in theology. I still don't have a clue. And it is God's grace and mercy that they're alive, that nobody killed anyone, and that we're still there, and by God's grace and mercy, that my kids love Jesus. It is God's grace and mercy. And really, really, parents, be loving and be forgiving towards yourself. It is, especially when I see young parents and they're trying so hard. And sometimes I tell them, you know, like when you see a young mom, there's one child, there's another child. She was pregnant and she's with them. And I said, I really don't understand. God told that the land should rest every 7 years. Why doesn't God give mothers every 7 years a little rest? Just if the land can just rest. Because it's producing and producing. And it is hard. And it just gets more and more complicated. And I really think the teenage years are very, very complicated. I am there many, many, and I'm not even, I kind of thought it's a Christian conference where I just say what Charles Swindoll said about family. There are many, many definitions what the family is. And you guys kind of already talked about this, and there are some slides that I'm going to go quicker, some slides that I'm going to really take my time, apparently. But family is where you put down your first roots, where you form most lasting impressions, where you put together the building blocks of your character, when you determine whether you will view life through the eyes of prejudice or acceptance. There is so much that family does, and it's a very powerful place to be. It is amazing what we can do and what we can pour in our children and our grandchildren. But when I talk about family, I also think, and I'm going to say this, a little wider family, and the Bible very often when it talks about family, it is generations. So I totally don't mind giving you all my slides, and you can probably send me an email the best way. Send me an email on a Focal app and just say, Ellen, I would love slides, and eventually you get them. Or the Focal app is going to disappear and Ellen is going to forget, but I hope he's going to. Healthy family model, and actually here is a link. I was asked to tell what is the healthy biblical family model, and I thought, I think that's even an oxymoron. Can we really find the healthy biblical family model? Is which family, and actually it was Peter who said, which family did well, you know? And I kind of like, okay, Aquila and Priscilla, yeah, we don't know. Mary and Joseph, we don't really know, but that sometimes didn't really sound that was really that great. They forgot a child for 3 days. But then it's like, it's family, which, that's okay. It's a, what family model will be, to me, well, maybe Joseph and Asenata, like, but you know, in Joseph in the Old Testament, because of the names of their Manasseh and Ephraim, because of the names of their sons, but the name of the sons are forget and fruitful. Forget all the things about my past, you know, and then fruitful. And it's so, but we really, is there really such a thing? This is actually, you can find the link to the article that is, Charles Swindoll. I am gonna need glasses. This is what happened when you're 50, you know. And it's, he's giving you there 8 characteristics. And I kind of, honestly, the older I'm getting, I think, if you really need some structure there, and what he's saying, it is really good to communicate, to be focused for each other, to be there for each other. I mean, all the good things, you know. And I kind of think that a lot of you already know that and are trying to spend time together, to open and frequent communication. For me, the open and frequent communication is just make sure you're in a car alone with a teenager and drive for a long time, because that's very often when the communication starts, and it's very helpful. Or when you are totally done and ready and you want to go to bed at 10, that's where the communication starts. And I'm not kidding. My husband and I would look at each other and say, how about tonight you do the third shift? I cannot do it. Because you're so tired, you know, and that's when they want to talk to you. Like, how about 8 o'clock in the morning we continue this? Yeah, right. But it is really, and actually what we do, majority of us, we actually are trying to raise ourselves. What I mean by that, what we didn't have, what our parents didn't do, what we wish we had. So it really, we are not, yes, there's this little human being, you know, but we are actually raising a child in us. And there was, you know, my parents never did this, and look what I'm doing for you. You know, I never had that, but I am providing that for you. So who are we actually raising there, this unique human being? Or we are just giving the things that we wish somebody did for us? And actually, pretty much if you can just forget the whole talk, what I'm trying to say, be aware of who you are. Be aware of your needs. And be aware of who your God is and where your identity and DNA in Christ stands. And then, that's a summary of all of this. Then hopefully you're not gonna damage and ruin. Be aware who you are. Because sometimes, very often, you just respond to the triggers that are in you and something triggers you. And sometimes it's very even simple. It took me years and years and years to figure this one out, and it's very simple. They didn't have a Snickers commercials when I was growing up, and not even Snickers chocolate. But there's that commercial, when you're hungry, you're not yourself. I don't even, so that took me years to figure that one out, because if I work all day and I come home and they're at me, you know, and I'm like, and in the Snickers commercial, there's this roaring lion that just kind of, and somebody gives him, you know, Snickers chocolate and he has a bite and he's, you know, normal. So for me, I realize when I'm hungry, I am not myself. So sometimes just even telling my kids, can you just give me 15, 20 minutes to have, to eat, or to just to sit down and we can talk. I would love to hear how your day was. Because if they are just coming there, like, and it took me a while to get to know that. Or like, if they would complain about their dad or say something, and then dad was like that, and I said, you have an amazing father. I didn't even have a father. I don't want you to hear, I don't want to hear anything. It's like, what am I, quit my talking? What are, you know, it's like, it is really, we really get stuck thinking that, you know, everything that this girl didn't have, I am making sure you're having. That doesn't mean those are your needs. That doesn't mean that that's what you want. That doesn't mean we are not the same. So really know who you are. And in, this is a very, very, very brief, a TA session. TA, transactional family. I was trained in that, transactional therapy. So there's a parent in you, there's an adult in you, and there's a child in you. And what they tell you, that every one of us has all of this, all three parts. We have to have it, we have it. Parent in us, it's very often, there's a critical parent, you know. And it's very often we do hear that voice, even sometimes it's internal. What are you thinking, Yelena? I mean, my mother is still there, you know. And then there's nurturing parent, you know. Good job, this is so good. You did it. You got up early and you didn't eat all the dessert at dinner. You know, good job. Adult is the one that we actually, very often we function from adult, and that should be, it's time for you to go to workshop. It will be really nice if you show on time. You should not be late, you know. Drink enough water, that is an adult. And a child in us is really, and we can have a very adaptive child, you know, you have to behave nice, you have to be, you know, nice to elderly and all of that. And then there is this rebellious child that we have. And we all have it all. It is how we grew up, what we are king, but very often in our communication or in our parenting, let's just say, yes, we need to be that critical and nurturing parent. And there are good things that come from both. And it is very normal. And the child that we are parenting, it is a big child. There is not even adult, and the parent is still not there. Gosh, looks like a snowman. So, which makes sense when they're babies, and the child is all. These are my emotions. This is how I feel, and these are my needs. That is still child in you today. This is how you feel, and these are your needs. So if you are not in connection with your needs and your emotions, if you don't recognize, maybe there's a part that you are ignoring. And neither one of this, even if it looks like this way, this is not healthy. But what we start doing is that we start doing, it's unhealthy. I'm a parent, and I'm an adult here, and you're a child. We forget to play with them, to be free. This is where the dreams come from. This is, and sometimes if we are not aware, so this is like unhealthy way that we can get, and not even letting our kids become an adult and become parents. And it's, as I said, it's really not easy. But it's, and the way, for example, I'm just gonna make this more fun, in a family, so there's a husband and a wife, and this is ideal situation. Sorry for, actually, guess what? There is more paper. So if this is me and my husband, and if he's gonna, I don't know, like he's gonna come and say, okay, let's see who's gonna be a good guy here, who's gonna be a bad guy. But it's like, okay, if he's gonna say, did you check our bank balance? Did you pay, you know, the credit card by the end of the month? He's asking me from adult. Well, he said, can you, okay, did you check our, yeah. Did you pay? And I'm like, why do I have to be the one doing it all the time? And then he says, that's not true. It is not that you're all the time, but I did last month. So you see how it goes. I'm a critical parent talking to his child. Then his child answers to me. And it seems that in this house, I have to do everything. So the more the communication gets like this, it gets messy. One thing what you can do, okay, that was a very, very quick a TA presentation and what you can do. But what Jesus did, very often he spoke to a parent, he spoke to adult, he spoke to child, almost sometimes in one sentence. That's right. I forgot that you did last month. I'm sorry, but can you do it this month? Will that be okay? It's like you kind of bring the calm. And it's, but it's kind of what I'm trying to say. Guys, seriously, there's like my mom and my dad, and there's his mom and his dad. There's this movie I cannot remember, and it's probably good that I don't remember. Maybe it's not really a good movie that I should recommend. But there's a scene when this young couple is just arguing in bed, sitting, you know, and then you see her parents on one side and his parents on the other side, and they're just jumping in with the comments, you know. And that's actually how I sometimes think the marriage is. You know, sometimes I just said, oh, Deanna, that's Greg's mom. Now I'm totally talking to Deanna here. Or is this Bob? I mean, this is a fun part, a fun fact being married to a psychologist. You know, it's like, okay, let's talk. Let's bring Roma and Ophelia, Deanna, and Bob in this. But anyways, there is very easily you can, and it's, you can read the Bible, you can watch a movie, you can live a life and know whether unhealthy it is and how unhealthy it could be. But there are biblical family models, and maybe that's a good one, but when you read, there was just so much mess in a Bible when he talks. And I'm actually going to have a slide because I kind of think it's fun to see all the mess that they've done. I feel a little bit better. This is something, if you study about family, what is a good thing, what is a bad thing? And there's actually what they're giving us, it's only a good, one good thing. So are they being, so when it comes to, there was a really, I don't know, okay, a cold, yeah. Family, so there are two actually axes. Is that how you call them in English? Yeah. One describes the family that is kind of rigid and cold and very warm and welcoming. Actually, cold is here and very warm and welcoming is here. So there's sun here. You know, and then there is, you know, I don't know, like a little snowflake, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's, and then also there are rules are very high and present. There are the rules, and there are no rules here. So there are rules and no rules. So if you have a cold family without rules, that is family that is not involved. You don't know, you know, we don't, I mean, there are no any healthy boundaries. There's nothing there. The kids don't know what is good, what is bad, and they're very distant from each other. It is very neglected child will grow here. And that's actually maybe the worst case scenario, guys. Actually, there are quite a few bad. Permissive, you can do whatever you want. We love you, there are no rules. So it's a permissive family. We love our kids, we spoil them. You know, we didn't have anything, so now our kids are gonna have whatever they wanna do. Here, the rules are here, but they're very cold. So this is what you should do. I mean, you can get spanked. I'm not really sure sometimes why you got spanked, but the rules are here. There's not. And the best thing is, here are the boundaries. Here are the rules, but we love you, and that's why we have them. So the best case scenario is, it is nurturing boundaries, expectations, responsive. So we all grew up in one of these families. And it's actually, being spanked is not the worst thing. Being unseen is the worst thing that can happen to a child. I don't see you. So when the parents even choose not to talk to each other, please don't do that. Please, 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 please don't. Or even worst case scenario, not speak to each other or speak through kids. Can you tell mother this? Or can you tell? What that means, I choose not to see a human being. That is so deep. I choose not to see. So there's one thing saying, I cannot talk right now. I need you some time. I'm not saying go and argue over there in front of the kids, you know. But you know what? Be messy with respect. You know, be human. But if you're going to do that in front of them, please in front of them say, I am very sorry. Apologize. And very sorry sounds really different when you're I am very sorry. Or I am very sorry. Please do not be that. I mean, we are big in the eyes of our kids. We are tall. We have the power. That's scary. So please be on your knees. I hope you're on your knees when you play with them. I hope you're on your knees. You're looking at them when you apologize. And there is no age appropriate or not appropriate time to say to your kids, I am sorry, I made a mistake. But anyways, this is kind of like, I have to say, I'm gonna mention here Peter Cesare. How many of you have read Peter Cesare, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality? Okay. It's a fun book, it's an easy book. I very often even recommend it to counselors. Please read it. It is really, I mean, when the book starts with, I knew something was really wrong when my, he's a pastor, when my wife said, I'm going this summer to visit my family, and when I come back, I'm not gonna go to your church. And I'm gonna think if I wanna stay in this marriage. And he says, I guess we have a problem. And like, well, he really is gonna get you quickly. But it is, he talks very often, he talks from a very easy and approachable way about family mess, and there's gonna be a few slides on Peter Cesare. The blessing and sins of our families going back to three generations profoundly impact who we are today. One of the things that I love to do, I don't know, how many of you are familiar with genogram? It's a fun thing to do, and that's what the genogram is. So when somebody comes to counseling, and you can totally Google it, you can find it online, it's easy to do it. So if the man are squares, the women are circles, so this is me and Greg, and this is our family, there's Benjamin, there is Sarah, and Sarah got married to a very nice man. And there's Hannah, but I come from a family of three girls, so you see how this is going. And then my sisters are married, you know, and there are my parents, but they were divorced very quickly, so that is not working. They're still alive. When somebody dies, you just kind of cross them. And then you can do this. Greg comes a family of four boys. Yeah, you can just imagine the dynamic that he and I have. And then his parents are both alive. They are in a good relationship, and Greg has a really good relationship with his dad. My dad is not dead, so sorry. But I have a very bad relationship with my dad. So that is genogram, and this is me. What I love to do is sometimes I do it even for somebody else just to see what the dynamic is, and sometimes I just do it so that I will pray. Sometimes I will say, who is believer here, who's not a believer? Who had problem with addiction here? Who can, it's just like, it really sometimes makes sense when you kind of put it down. And also he talks about the 10 commandments in your family, so there in his book. Really fun. Like, what are some of the things that we grew up with? And when I said, like, if you forget everything, just try to get to know yourself. Because just think, if you get in a new car and you don't know how actually, you know, long it is, it's hard to park a new car, a car you just sit in. Get to know your car or your blind spots. Get to know yourself. Because sometimes you're really just projecting things. People, the person is not even thinking. It is really you. Or sometimes, you know, when you watch a movie and you just, the scene is just okay and you're just sobbing. Or you listen to a sermon and you're just touched. And nobody around you maybe is touched. That means that I just hit a certain spot. And what I will encourage you to do is have a quiet time and ask Jesus, what was that? What is there? What is this that my child is doing or my spouse is doing that is just really rubbing the wrong way? What's happening here? I mean, the study shows that if you can just name the emotion, if you just recognize, and if you come from Eastern Europe, then I mean, we will only have two emotions. We are sad or we're really angry. So if the woman can, and also, it is really, the woman have the right to be sad, man have the right to be angry. Man should not cry, and the woman should not be angry. Very often, can you guess what happens in therapy? The men that are very afraid and overwhelmed and depressed come to counseling, and the women that are angry come to counseling, but they come with a smile, of course. So it's like we are totally emotionally illiterate. They're just, you know, you can only have these two. So we don't even recognize when there's just bitterness and jealousy. And guys, Google, there are a lot of emotions there. Or if you don't wanna Google, go and watch even Inside Out, number one and number two, a fun, fun cartoon. Watch it alone, watch it with your kids. It really even explains a lot of different emotions. Then the moment you name the emotion, the study shows that the 70% of the work is done, you're already better. Even if you say, I guess I'm jealous. You know, I guess I envy them. Why do I envy them? So it has nothing to do with that person, but it really, that just triggered something that I wish I had. It's so really, it is very, very important. gosh, I'm just giving you the bad news, and there's still more slides on bad news. Okay, you, I'll gladly give you this. I'm gonna go very quickly. This is Peter Cesare, get the book. This is, I'm not gonna do, these are some of the questions if you have time, and if I will have time, I will totally let you kind of discuss what are some of the unspoken and spoken rules that were expected to be obeyed in your primal family. Primal family is your mom and dad. Your family, if you're married, that's your family right now. How have rules in your family impacted you and your parenting today? I mean, something to think about. I'm not gonna let you go there now, sorry. Our family of origin does not determine our future, God does. And that is something I really would love you to kind of embrace. And it's sometimes what I do when I kind of look at the, you know, genogram, you can really get depressed, okay? You know, who had problem with alcohol or who cheated on their wives, you know, especially like this, my hidden side, you know? Well, the Christians sometimes can be really messy too, let's just say that. But what I try to do sometimes is what are the antidotes? Okay, if these are the narrative that was false narrative spoken to me, you're only worthy when you work hard, when you get a diploma. You're not worthy just because you are. Which means what? That Hannah is worthy less and I love her less because she has autism. Because by the standards of this world, she's never gonna make me proud. She's just a little bit of my child. Like what are, honestly, the false narrative that I got really made me constantly study and trying to prove myself even to this very harsh and mean 85-year-old that I'm trying to impress. The DNA, and I think there's here. There's another here thing that you can do, and I'll gladly share this. It's a Beaver system model, so you can kind of grade your family, but you're not gonna do it right now. And I love this comment. It's again Peter Cesare, so just get a book. Discipleship is putting off the sinful patterns and habits of our families of origin and being transformed to life as members of Christ's family. And I really strongly believe that the DNA doesn't define our future. It is who we are in Christ. Who he called us to be. How much our Father loves us. And yeah, there's a whole thing on biblical dysfunctional family. If you want to do a sermon, you can do it. Raising family in the 21st century, it is toxic. It's exhausting. It's overwhelming. So if you choose not to have certain topics with your kids, guess what? This world already had that conversation with them. So you better be the loudest voice there. Because this world is very, very loud. And it's very, very hard. You think it was hard for you when you were a teenager? 21st century teenagers. Seriously, it is very, very toxic. There is pandemic on. You know, there's like my daughter, she's of course studying psychology. She married a psychologist. I'm telling you, we're a messy family. And she would come and when she was, you know, a student, she would come and say, I had a panic attack, or I had like, and like, girl, you had an amazing childhood. You should not have a panic attack. That is exactly what I'm thinking and feeling. She's like, Mom, my whole generation is messed up. And actually, it is. There's so much anxiety, depression. There's very rarely the people sit at the table and eat together. It is so, the grandparents are not there. They live far. I mean, it's just so, it is so hard. I mean, it's kind of like my grandparents' generation just really wanted to survive. My parents' generation wanted to give me just a bare good minimum that just to have a good life, you know. I wanted to give my kids much more, you know. So it seems sometimes that my generation is raising Paris Hilton. You got it all. We really wanted you to go to Greece vacation. We really wanted you to do this. What do you think, you have an issue? How can you have an issue? It is a very hard time that we're living in. And please, please, have grace and mercy for your children and for yourself. So the 21st chance, these are some of the things that the kids are dealing with. Overexposed, children are depressed. I mean, it's like in my time, if somebody wants to watch pornography, he has to work hard. I am a child, I mean, the internet and cell phones came later. I was in my 20s. So that's a good thing, I guess. In Serbia, communism, we had only two channels on TV. There you go. You can watch news, you can watch kids' thing, and maybe sometimes you can watch a movie. And guess what? Sometimes there'll be two movies in one night. We called it a marathon. Yeah? So you guys could binge Netflix, and I totally binge Netflix. I do. And this will be a fun thing. If you guys have family and if you ever want to do psychopathology and family, I have a movie for every psychopathology there is. I do love memories. So it's like, and because in psychopathology, whenever you're listening to all the issues that can go wrong, you're thinking, oh my gosh, that's me, seriously. So I'm, at least I'm saying, no, look at this, that's them. But anyways, there are some things that I, okay, different kind of pain. Yeah, that when the dreams of luxuries become needs, we know more, we expect more, we suffer more. This is an interesting thing, and I'm gonna probably not pronounce it right. Iatrogenic effect. What it is, when now we know more. So we know, for example, the couple knows that we need to communicate, but we don't communicate. So we are just guilty that we are not doing it. So there's just that this new thing, and you go to a marriage and family, conference, and you just learn all the things that you should do, and you should implement in your marriage and how good that is for your marriage, but you're not doing it. So then there's just more burden and more guilt. And very often that's all you get. You don't get like, oh, I got it, we can do it. But you're like, it's kind of like you're falling and you're falling from the airplane and you're trying to remember the instructions, how to open a parachute. It really doesn't help if you don't know it. I'm like, wow, what was that page? What did it? So it could only really bring sometimes. I love this. I read that in a book, so it's not mine. It was a book actually that I read, and of course I cannot remember. It was raising girls, and so I put the pictures from Wizard of Oz here because there was something so powerful here. That is, never give your children a false presentation of yourself. And like a Wizard of Oz, that they're totally afraid of this strong voice and big voice that is constantly present, and there is fear. If you raise your children in a fear, eventually they're gonna realize that behind the curtain, there's just an old man. They're gonna eventually come and realize that we are human beings. So be a human being all their childhood. Yes, they need boundary. Boundary is very important for you and for them. But just presenting the false self. No, mom and dad were really good in school. Well, eventually they're gonna find out that you're not that good in school. Or mom and dad, I never did that. And I certainly, my daughter, I was teasing. There's three of us, and my middle sister was such a troubled child, and she did all the crazy things you can think of. And I was actually kind of nerdy and a good kid. I want to believe that I was a good kid, even though there was a summer that I went with the scuba divers for 10 days. I was 16. I don't even know how my mom let me go. But I guess when you come to a third child, she's like, sure, go. You're going to be fine. And I didn't come home for 2 months. There's no cell phones. But I was a good kid, and I was. But it's like, but I will remember telling my kids. And I'm like, there are certain stories that you're like, your husband knows. You're like, do not ever tell him. Well, certainly they should not know right now. But eventually they're going to find out. And okay, just be that human being. Everybody makes mistakes. It is not the end of the world. And I think, and actually our daughter was really all over the chart when she was 14, 15. The girl at the age of 12 asked to be baptized because Jesus was so important in her life. And then she started dating this boy who was not a believer. And it's just, I mean, at that moment when we are raising Sarah, I mean, let me just tell you this. There were moments in my life when Hannah was the most predictable and easiest child. She's that one with a severe autism. And there were a lot of books on that. And it's for some reason with Hannah. And I tried so hard to protect Hannah because she's very vulnerable, not realizing that I don't think I did enough to protect Sarah. But Sarah was a troubled child, poor thing. Now like if she would know how much I talk about her. And I totally understood all the Jane Austen books at that moment. That's why you send the child to cousin far away in a country somewhere. Because who knows what a stupid thing she will do if she stayed in London. Like if she stayed where we are. So seriously, the last year in high school, we sent her to cousins in the United States. We totally did. I know I'm that bad, bad parent thinking she needs to get away from here or she's gonna be married with a child, But actually before she had left, we told her, Sarah, and we had tough conversations. It was tough. It was really, really, really tough. I mean, I was, seriously, I would wake up and I will knock at her door and she would not answer. And we live in this lovely, lovely house. It's just one story house. And I walk around and she's not in her room, you know, so it was tough. But we had two tough conversations. One was, you are mine. You're mine, whatever happens. And I love you. And I'm choosing to love you more than this world will ever love you. If you are pregnant, I am here. I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna love that child. I'm gonna help you and support you. If you fall in love with your friend that is female, I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna be there for you. I don't agree with things. And certainly, in that pastor and me, it's like we communicated enough where we stand, what we believe. She knew all of that. And it was one of the best conversations. When Greg and I both said, we choose to be here for you, whatever tomorrow brings. And in that time, we were thinking, I hope it's not going to bring anything horrible. But I really, and actually, you know what it was? That was not me. Do I trust Sarah? Do I trust God? Do I really trust God with my kids? Do I trust that he loves them? Do I trust that he, and very often, parents, please remember, you know, the story is not finished. Our story is not finished. Their story is very often just beginning. And what I've seen God do, I think I shared yesterday. Hannah shared the gospel. Oh, no, I didn't share yesterday this. Sorry. Hannah, my severely autistic daughter, she is, okay, Hannah has been probably the biggest revelation to me who God is as a father. And I love Hannah. She just is. She just is. She's not going to do, you know, she's not going to bring great grades or diplomas or grandkids. She just is. And I love her. That's how he loves every one of you. You don't have to have a diploma. You don't have to impress him. You don't have to. You just are. And he loves you. I knew you even before when you were created in your mother's womb. He knows our thoughts even before they come out. You know, even before we are aware of them, he's ahead of us. I mean, it's overwhelming the way he knows us, but he chose to love us in the midst of that. That is a miracle. And there was a moment when Hannah did, and this is who our God is. I cannot, in my limited mind, even comprehend this. You know, praying for Hannah, and I'm trying to find the perfect place for Hannah, and we still don't have it. You can pray for Hannah, pray for me and my husband. But a few years ago, Greg and I went for a dinner. We come back, and there is this girl that is not a believer, a sweet young girl that was watching Hannah. She's crying, and it's like 10 o'clock in the evening. It's like, everything okay? If you broke something, it's fine. Nothing is really valuable in our house. She says, no, something happened, and I don't know what. Like, so what is it? And she says, Hannah asked me to pray for her. Hannah never did before, never did later. Hannah has the words. Very often, she chooses her vocabulary, and her vocabulary is very rich when it comes to the content of the refrigerator, what she's going to eat. So can you pray for me? She never asked me that. I do pray for her, but she doesn't ask. I guess she doesn't have to ask because I don't know what I'm doing. But she asked this girl, pray for me. I want you to pray. I want to pray. I want to pray. That's what she said. And the girl said, I don't know how to pray, Hannah. How about you pray? Mm-hmm. This was my, at that time, 12-year-old daughter did. Thank you, Jesus, for mom and dad, tablet, and spaghetti. I mean, you can totally understand Hannah's life. And this girl said, and Hannah said, amen. Hannah fell asleep. And she says, this has been 2 or 3 hours ago, and I cannot stop crying. What is this? And I said, I think my daughter brought you in the presence of Jesus. This girl is a young woman now that serves in Hannah's Hope Ministry that we have, became a believer. Share the gospel that night, but Hannah did actually most of the work. But actually, of course, the presence of Jesus and it's God. And Hannah has a better view of ministry than I do. She didn't take it. I did. Do you know how many I people brought to Christ? You know, Hannah, it's sometimes just so aware of his presence that if you have not been around the kids with special needs, I don't even know if you know what I'm talking about, and you're missing it. But let me just tell you who our God is. So for a long time, I thought, okay, we need a place for Hannah. If Greg and I cannot take care of her, we need a place. But God wants much more than I ever thought. And this is what God told me. Do not ask a place for Hannah where she can just be. Ask where I want her to minister and serve. And you know, when Jesus was coming to Jerusalem and everybody's, you know, screaming, Hosanna, Hosanna, you know, and of course there are always the smart scribes and Pharisees saying, well, tell him to stop, you know. And he says that the rocks will cry out. I think what we are witnesses, there are more and more kids with autism, and they are gonna speak. At our camps, we do Johnny and Friends camps. We have kids that are on the spectrum that know worship songs. I don't even know where they are. Their parents are not believers. There was just a song they will hear. They would, you know, have the talent show, and they will be the ones bringing the gospel and the light. And they are the ones. So if God has a plan for my severely autistic daughter and a future, he has for every one of your kids. And our God is a good God. And our God is a creative God. And our God is God that can do anything. What amazing. So do we trust him with our children? Do we trust him with our families? Do we really believe when somebody even comes to us, counseling, as pastors, I don't know what your roles are, but you must be a leader because you're at a conference, a leadership conference. So if whoever comes to you, do you really believe that God can heal and restore the family? If God, I really want you to take this story home. If Hannah can be a witness and a missionary, God has a plan for every one of us. God has a role for every one of us. God has a future of hope. Even though when that was said, the future of hope, and that verse in Jeremiah we all love to quote, right before that, he says, well, 70 years, you're gonna be stuck here. So that means most of you that understand this message are gonna die. But he does have a future of hope for you. That is Jeremiah verse that we are very often quote from 29. But even maybe it's going to be the next generation. I'm not going to be witnessing that on this earth. But God has a plan for every one of my kids. And let me tell you what I said in the beginning. It is pure grace and mercy because I had a big, fat capacity to ruin it. My parents did. I did. I wish I did something differently. I wish I was not so consumed with Hannah. I want to say that I was consumed because she was hurting. But very often, and I've tried to tell Benjamin and Sarah, if you were the hurting one, I will give you that much attention. But we did. I mean, we were one of those parents that sometimes we would get a phone call from Sarah's teacher, and she says, hello, this is Sarah's teacher. And I said, oh my gosh, what happened? She says, oh, no, nothing happened. I was just wondering, are you going to come and pick her up? We totally forgot she was in. We were those parents. But that's the year. This is my excuse. Hannah was just diagnosed with autism. We didn't have a clue what to do. But yeah, that affected Sarah. Hannah shaped Sarah and Benjamin's childhood. And let me tell you, Sarah was very angry very often because we were not there. I love, okay, this is totally not my story. It's the story of Jeremy Root just shared the other day in our network. And he says that they had, as a family, like sometimes a child could even call for a family meeting. You know, he has four kids. And he tells this story much better, so you can watch it online, or you can ask him, and he will gladly tell you while you're in a hurry to get to the next workshop. So he's telling this story. He has four kids. You know, sometimes his youngest child, 8-year-old kid, says, I need a family meeting. And he says, so my wife and I decided, okay, we're going to have a family meeting. And they sit at the table. They prayed, and they said, okay, tell us. And I don't know. I think David is his youngest son. David, what is wrong? He says, my siblings don't love me. And he's like, oh, we're going to resolve this one very easily. We're going to ask his siblings, and of course they're going to tell him, we love you. And, you know, this is going to be done. We're asking his siblings, and they're like, we don't love him. Life is messy. Life is messy. The rest of the story you have to ask him. I'm not going to totally steal his story. But concentrate on your assets. Ask yourself, what are the strengths? Sometimes what I don't like about these, you know, workshops, because there is not really how to. Very often you're going to do certain things, A, B, and C, and the D doesn't follow. But pretty much the core of everything is trust God. Trust God. And tell him, give me faith. Help me. Help my unbelief. Bring your liabilities to God. What are your responsibilities towards our children? How are we providing, and how are we failing? I mean, for me and Greg, it was 5 years ago. I used to be at home a lot with Hannah, and 5 years ago, Greg is a pastor, and he said, God told me that Hannah is the most important member of my church. I want to watch her more. That was a shock, because Hannah, at that time, was 15, girl, 15, that needs help with everything. And he really stepped in. And it just helped me fall in love with the same guy again. Because, okay, let me just tell you this, because I've read this somewhere and I think it's true. We are all in arranged marriages. You know that? We're all in arranged marriages, arranged by a younger self. So what did that, you know, kid, a 20-year-old kid, I was 20 when I got married, 19 I decided I'm going to marry Greg. So what in the world did I know that a 50-year-old woman is going to need? So really, in our marriage, we need to come to the point to get to know each other. Because very often, maybe we do start this marriage dancing to the same tune. But after a while, you find yourself, you're totally doing tango and he's doing polka. And it's not looking good. So just, I mean, when he said that 5 years ago, I'm like, I love you. Because that was the heart of Jesus that I saw in my husband. And I fell in love again. So actually, I really think that Hannah is saving my marriage. Sometimes, you know, putting it, but that don't brood over your failures. Please, please do not ruminate over your failures and bring him to Jesus again. The more closely we follow certain child-rearing manual, Christian or not Christian, the more we become concerned with the end product that will fit into family life, church life, or community life. And this is where I said that our family of origin does not determine our future. God does. We are part of his family. When he says that he's going to engrave our name on his palms, you know who does that? It was the name of the owner will be maybe on the body of the servant, but not the other way around. And he's going to have our name. I mean, Ephesians 1, it is our inheritance. It is unbelievable. The plan that he has for us, that he's preparing for us. I don't know, if you just ever can wrap your mind around who do I belong to, whose name I carry, who is pouring into me, who decided to build, to call the temple in my body, our body. We are his imago Dei, and we are the temple of his son. That is just, and then we are, as a church, married to his. I mean, like, there's just a lot of family issues here and happenings that is amazing. Shaping our children by God's dignity, not by our human rules and dignity. And very often, even the good thing, how do we find good? What do you want for your children? I always wanted my kids to know God. I just wanted my kids to know God. I didn't want them just to know God. I want them to be in love with Jesus. So when they went through all the pain and suffering, did they sometimes go, God is saying, Elena, didn't you want this? You trust me that this is what I'm doing. And very often it looks like he's chiseling me and them into the likeness of his son. And it hurts. But I really don't believe in how to. There are a lot of books and, you know, there are some books that are very helpful. But we end up being so overwhelmed. Really, I don't know if you... There's this part of the, very often in Gestalt therapy, they have an empty chair. So you kind of, you can even ask, you have a therapy, you can ask your client, who would you want to bring here? And sometimes they would say, my mom, and what would your mom say? Yeah, it's kind of, you know, Gestalt therapy. But sometimes what I do in my quiet time, I do a little Gestalt moment. I told you guys, I really do it. I'm sitting, I have this chair that I love to be in, and the chair is kind of like getting a shape of all the books that I have around. But sometimes I just grab a chair and bring in front of me and say, Dad, listen to me. And I have a conversation with my Heavenly Father. And that makes a difference. Today, when I go and visit my dad, there's a retirement home, and he has personality disorder because of trauma. He has dementia, and he's always been a harsh man. He is now an old, mean, harsh man that never, okay, this is a compliment he gave me and my sisters. Considering how your kids turned out, you didn't turn out that bad. Seriously. It is such a, and when I go, and I believe that God tells me to go and visit this man, and I do go and visit. I mean, we pay for his bills. And he was not there. Do you remember that? He was not there. It is God's grace and mercy. But I do say, Dad, the Heavenly Father, I cannot do it. I cannot be a daughter to this man. And I really, he reminds me over and over, you're first mine. You're mine. And then I totally go with a different posture, with a different attitude. Everything is different when you really grasp that our identity is in him and who we are and how he sees us. Then we approach our children, our family, and all the mistakes that we made differently. And if we are concerned, if we are concerned how the end product is, it is very often looking at the tree and seeing what are the fruit that tree is bringing, and being upset that, you know, we wanted apples and we got bananas, you know. But it's really, what are the roots? What is the truth that we spoke into their life? What is the truthful narrative? And the narrative is not, oh my gosh, you know, you're not that smart. That's gonna be a good enough school for you, or you cannot really do it. You're really not into sports, you know. But it is, you are, I am the child of God. And you know that they kind of pick up more than how we live than what we say. So it's really, if they see, and my kids can see it, because I've been so many times broken that very often what keeps me going is not PA and Gestalt. I did all of that because I was broken and my family was broken. It is Jesus. It is very, very simple. So I really encourage you that to really focus on the roots. And that's where that self-image comes. I am the child of God. He created me. And, okay, I love this painting. It's John Everett Miller's painting, Victory, O Lord. And there's Moses in that battle that God told him right before that they're not going to go into battles because they're going to lose heart and they're not going to go to promised land. And the next chapter, they're in a battle. I mean, that's something that kind of God does. But these are some of the, and this is the last slide. Lessons from Moses. Never go into battle without praying. Pray, pray, pray. Never go alone. Make sure you have someone before you, beside you, and behind you. What I mean by that, recognize who are your peers that are helping you and holding your hands. Make sure who is that mentor, that the books you're reading, that you want to have a conversation, that really gets it how it is. And make sure you're watching who's following you and who's watching you. Who are those kids, spiritual or biological kids, that are watching you and they're behind you? Where was I? Oh. We have not experienced parenting unless we prayed fervently in our prayers for our children. Battle is always his. Yahweh Nisi, Lord, is our battle. It is his. He wants our kids to know him. He wants our kids to be well. He wants our kids to become the image of his son more than we can ever comprehend. And there is a price for that. We are called to be part of his fellowship of suffering. Thank you. Thank you for your time, and yes, my kids are doing well at the moment. Benjamin is 29, he's not married, pray for that. Or maybe he's happy to be there. Benjamin's story is my PhD, but that's another story and another topic. Sarah's married to a lovely man, and Hannah's at home, she's 20. And just recently, I was giving Hannah a bath, and Hannah has a few words, and she just smiles, And I just thought, I love this. And I'll tell you what, I love this. I was supposed to be somewhere. I was asked to speak somewhere. And I said, I couldn't. I'm watching Hannah. And just, I'm so glad I had to be at home and be with you. She is sometimes really making me sit down, enjoy Jesus, come to Jesus, praise Jesus, ask Jesus for help. There's a lot of Jesus. But it is, I don't always get it. I really don't. I don't always get it that it's honor and joy to raise Hannah. But I'll tell you, there are at least five people that came here to ELF that work in Hannah's Hope organization. And they sometimes love Hannah more than I do. They sometimes love me and support me. And that's amazing. I have amazing Aaron next to me, amazing her next to me. I have amazing people. And Hannah, raising Hannah, it's not easy. So our friends are very picked and chosen, because not everybody's okay with a screaming child. I get it. It's like, oh, we have a night to go and visit our friend. Who should we go and visit? Oh my gosh, let's go and visit Greg and Yelena. You know, but we do have some that come. Hannah handpicked our friends, and the best stayed.